Recording in progress.
Hi, Daddy. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests.
Morning. I think we can start.
Yes, Chairperson, we can start the meeting.
Good morning, honorable members, of the support staff, our guests. I'll say more about our guests later. And everybody is on the platform. We are having a discussion with the Auditor General. Today, as a committee, I'll say more about that again before the AG starts with a presentation. But before we proceed, can I get indication of apologies?
Chairperson, yes, we received 3 apologies for today's meeting from Ms. Nklang Buini, Mr. Matafa, and Mr. Nyanzana.
Let's note those apologies, let me welcome the Auditor General. I don't know who's leading the AG team, Jerry.
Ms. Bongi and Goma is leading the immigration chair.
Come again?
Ms. Bongi and Goma.
Okay. Ms. Goma, you are most welcome. Thank you for saying the community. Can I have everybody meeting? They are gadget. Thank you. As I was saying, Missing Goma and your team, you are welcome. Just a brief background to this meeting. The committee received a report from National Treasury on the Q4 2021-22, that's the end of the financial year, about the expenditures of the different departments. One of the things which came out as a problem there was the question of some departments underspending. And the implications of that are huge, to say the least. namely the big one is that the people who are supposed to receive those services are denied those services. So the committee is just trying to get from the AG's perspective exactly what is happening. That's one of the things that we are going to try and get solution to this, so that the money that is appropriated by Parliament gets used and gets used for what it's supposed to be used for. Hence, we then requested the AG to come and engage with the committee. Perhaps if this team is led by Ms. Boma, that we take this opportunity to say AG Women's Month. And again, as you know, that as we deny our people services because of understanding, the people who are hardest hit in most cases are women and children. So I think it's opportune for us to deal with this matter now. And we saw the agenda, we gave the declaration, right, the presentation from the AG. And then after that, we give an opportunity to the oral member to interact with the presentation. And then after that, it will be announcements, and then we close after that. Ms. Ngoma, is it Ngoma or Ngoma?
Thank you, Honorable Butere. Good morning. It's Ngoma.
Okay, thanks, ma'am. You are most welcome with that team. We'll give you 45 minutes maximum. You don't have to take all of it if you so prefer. But after that, we'll then come in and interact with the presentation. Mainly, I think, with the areas of clarification, questions from your side. And then after that, we'll give you an opportunity to respond to the questions which have been raised by the moderator today. Okay. Thank you very much. Start with your presentation. You are all yours. Thank you so much.
Honorable Chair, let me greet you once more and also take this opportunity to greet the members, honorable members that are on this call, and to also thank you so very much for this opportunity where we come and interact with SCOA on the key matters that you have highlighted. And I think this conversation is happening at an appropriate time for the office, as we are in the journey of implementing the new strategy that has been launched by our Auditor General, Zakani Manjeke. And part and parcel of that strategy, Honorable Mutilezi, talks about the need to strengthen everyone in the accountability ecosystem. We are part of that system, and this committee is a key member of that system, and it's going to be important that we continuously strengthen each other. We empower you with the insights so that you are able to enable your own oversight so that the citizens on the ground can get better service delivery. As you have highlighted earlier on, that we are in the Women's Month and we are discussing important matters that talk to women and children that are deprived by the service. Honorable Chair, I wanted to kick off by also introducing my members, and maybe we can just show their faces. I'm not alone on this call, but before I do that, also to apologize for the Auditor General Zakani Madudeke, who could not be part of this engagement. She had wanted to be part, but it clashes. There's another engagement which is at our premises. I heard one of your members, I think, is part and parcel of that SCOWEC engagement, so she could not be able to come and present to you. So I am one who is deployed by the Auditor General. Thank you so very much. Can I then introduce Sabrent, who could just show your camera quickly? Sabrent is a senior manager in my office. He's going to assist to navigate the questions with me, as I learned that it's not going to be an easy session. Thank you so much. I'm also with Makoboi Griffiths. Makoboi Griffiths and then Zizi Paul Makalima. So those are the members that are accompanying me on the television. Honorable, you are on mute. Honorable.
No, I was saying thanks for everything. I was saying, can they please show their faces so that we can see that you are not talking to
robots. But you're robots.
You're robots, exactly.
Good morning, Jay. It's good for me to be with you and the honorable members. I'm looking forward to a very fruitful discussion this morning.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Kruger.
The two other ladies, I'm not so sure why they are shy on showing their faces, but let's proceed. One of them is going to assist with the navigation of the slide. All right.
Perfect.
Makoboy, if you can start to show the slide. Thank you so very much. So, Honorable, we usually kick off our conversations and interactions with just reminding ourselves of the mission and the vision of the office. I know that we are all familiar with this vision, but we exist, of course, to strengthen the democracy of our country, and we do so by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance, which I think is critical that we are having this conversation, because both parties, being the AGSA and yourself, are located in this mission. So our role is to issue you with the audit report, with the insights, with the information and the interaction that we are going to have today, so that we can enable you to then be rigorous as you engage with your duties, as you enforce accountability, and as you enforce the government in the public sector. So it's important that we kick off by just refreshing our memories around that.
We can hear you very well. Please keep your camera on. Our IT people always request that. I think your network, your connectivity is quite strong. Yeah. You can have that. Thank you. You can. And can I request everybody else to mute please, so that you can hear and see very well. Everybody who's on the platform, can you please mute your gadget? Gary, can you make sure that everybody is muted? If they can't mute from their side, please mute them. Okay, continue.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. Okay. So, Chair, before we unpack the main request, which was to provide information on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure on the material irregularities, we felt it is important that we first draw your attention on the financial health of this audit. If you can move to the next slide, we felt that let's first unpack what the financial health of this audit look like, so that when we engage around fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we understand what these behaviors and the culture and the ESG and the non-compliance that sits behind these numbers tell us. And we all have a view that if these things are left unchecked, they can have a worsened situation or dire state in the financial health of our audit. So what am I saying? I'm saying that if there's inaction in addressing the culture behind this fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it can become very, very costly, not only for the state, but for the citizens who are not getting the services on the ground. And for us and for yourselves, this financial health is critical as it indicates the ability of the ODT to meet their current obligations, and also an ability to give assurance that they will be able to continue to operate in the near future. And it mainly talks to the ability of the ODC to ultimately deliver on the services for the betterment of the South African citizens. So hence, we thought it's important to center and anchor our message on this graph. So what this graph tells us, mainly for the national ODC, is that some of the ODPs are in a good financial health status, some are of concern, and some require urgent intervention. So those that are in the category that is good in terms of all the ODPs, OTT, look at the whole population, 30% of the OTT indicate that they are in a good financial health status. However, the 80% are either in the off-concern or in the category where they require intervention, and that is very concerning. If we then drill a bit deeper and look at the departments, the public entities, and the state-owned entities, so what we are saying is that 29% of the departments are in a good position, good financial health position. However, 62% are beginning to show concern, are of concern, with 9% that require urgent intervention. And then on the public entities, what this slide tells us is that 44% are in a good financial health status, with 30% being of concern and 23% requiring urgent intervention. State-owned entities, this is not new, Honorable Chair. State-owned entities, only 9% of those have a good financial health status, only 9. And the remainder, which is 81, are either of concern or require intervention. So it was important that we said that, but what do I mean? Let's drill a bit deeper now to say what are those indicators that spoke to this financial health status that I just talked about. So either these auditees have recorded a deficit, number one, or they have they are indicating cash a shortfall, or they are in a bank overdraft, or they are not collecting their debtors in the collection period that they should be collecting in, or they are not paying their credit cards in time, or they are suffering from medical claims or other legal claims that they need to start to cater for. So if we unpack a bit now on the deficit, so what we are saying is that 50 of the OTT recorded a deficit for 2021, 50 of the 381 recorded a deficit. Continuing on that, 27 OTT indicated a cash shortfall, indicated that they will struggle to continue with their operations if they do not get a financial assistance. And now on the TPC, if we look at the departments that are in the top list of these departments that the Department of Public Enterprise is one of them, Department of Health, and then the Department of Education. These are the main contributors of the TPC. And then if we look at those that are starting to show cash shortfall in terms of the department, the Department of Social Development, that's number one, the Office of the Premier, Department of Public Works, they are beginning to show that they have short cash flow. And if you remember, Honorable Members and Chair, in the previous year, we already pledged increases in litigation or claims against. And the most common claims are the medical or medical negligence claims against mainly the provincial health department. And these are the departments that would ordinarily not budget for such claims, which then means that if these claims are successful and they are not budgeted for, they will be paid from funds that are earmarked for service delivery, and further eroding the ability of these departments to be financially sustainable. So it's important to just flag that part. There are other departments that are also hard on the area of claims. The Department of Police, the Department of Defense, and then the Department of Higher Education and Training. We can share this details with you, Chairperson, so that we can have a picture of what we are talking about and the numbers that we are saying. So what am I saying?
We'll definitely appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Chair. So we'll just meet up and then share the details about this life, speaking behind this life. So if I conclude on this life and expect all to talk to the main reason we are here, is what am I saying basically is that the financial health of most of these policies are of concern, and that intervention is required. And this signals something that will be elevated in this cycle, and we are asking our audit for the 2021-22 financial year. So we're going to signal the fact that these entities are putting more pressure on the fiscal. So that is the message that we are going to signal in this cycle as we are busy finalizing our general report. And this is further exacerbated by the conversation that we are going to have now. The fact that most of the ODCs are already in the area of concern or requiring intervention, and what we see on the ground being a culture of indiscipline, a culture of non-compliance to laws and regulations, a culture of waste. That culture of waste translating our thoughts to wasteful expenditure, to financial losses in the form of irregularities. And also what worsens this one is the fact that there is either non-implementation or poor implementation of infrastructure projects. And services are then deprived to put the citizens on the ground. So there is a slide at the end where I will talk about this infrastructure grant area that I'm referring to. So, Honorable Chair, for critical that I flag this one for your attention, of course, so that when we engage, we begin to have an overview of what this conversation of the success and mean in a larger scene. So it's critical that we then understand that not only is the leakage in the environment because of this, but also there is another leakage in the form of rents and cents, number one. There is then this translating to the fact that the citizens are deprived of critical services, like I'm going to talk about at the end. If you can then move Makopon to the next slide. Right. I don't want to spend much time, Honorable, on this slide. I do believe we are all aware of what the definition of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is, but just to remind ourselves, it is the expenditure that was made in vain, and it could have been avoided had reasonable care been exercised. By who? By the accounting officer. And our law is very clear, located in Section 38 and Section 40, very clear on what the accounting officer ought to do in curbing these losses. The accounting officer must take effective and appropriate steps to prevent, number one, these fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So their roles are located in Section 38. Again, Section 38 continues to say that accounting officer, upon discovery of this, they must immediately report it in writing. Number two. And then number three, there's another step that they need to take. They don't just end it where they identify and then they report, but they must also take effective and appropriate steps against officials that are responsible for this expenditure. Further to that, they've got to report these expenditures in the annual report and in the audited financial statement. So that is the expectation from the accounting officer. If you can move to the next one. Next slide. Right. So the request was that we provide you with the highest contributor of this fruitless and wasteful expenditure over the 5 years. But we thought it was important just to take you through a journey of what is the total amount over the last 5 years, and in terms of the departments that have been carried, how many are they and what has been the trend over the years. So over the last 5 years, the whole 1.52 billion was incurred as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure by the one department. And if you then, this is now cumulative, we're talking over a period of And when one of those 41 that are expected have integrity in a consistent basis, they keep showing up on the 21 are consistent delinquents, if I were to use that term on the chief. And then if you look at the trend since 2017, it's been fluctuating. It's even difficult to say this fruitless has been increasing or has been reducing. It's been just fluctuating over the years. So where it was 132 million in 2017 went up to 25 in 17-18 to 25 million, 231 million in 18-19, 331 million in 1920, and then 199 million in 2021. In 2021. We are still finalizing the information on our check for this financial year 2021-22. We should be able to provide you with that information once it has been finalized. Just to see whether this graph is going up or down. But it has been difficult to identify whether it's going up and down. We may think it is going down because it reduced from 2021 from 331 million to 199, but again, the picture of 2122 will give us a better view of whether it is reducing. Then we can begin to go back and identify what are the drivers of this reduction, what are the behaviors that sit behind it, so that we can work hard at enforcing those good behaviors and also sharing and replicating the good behaviors so that we can change the culture in the public sector. Right. Of the highest contributors, they are listed there on the far right. Defense, of course, is at the top of this list, followed by National Treasury, basic education, tourism, etc. So that is the order in terms of who is at the top of this list. Now, if we drill a bit deeper, the next slide, if we drill a bit deeper, in the information that we have provided you here, sort of tabulated line by line in terms of what is that nature of that fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But when we look at the trend of this fruitless and wasteful, mainly in the area of IT, where licenses would be acquired and paid for, but the software is not utilized. I'm sure you are fully aware of the famous case of the National Treasury, the IUPN. Others as well have it done the same way. They acquired the licenses and then the software is not utilized. And then the other area where we see this waste expenditure is where they pay for property that are not occupied. There's quite a lot of that, especially in the defense. And then there's other areas where goods and services that are not then utilized or unwanted are also paid for. And then the area of project management is an area that we are closely paying attention on. We're beginning to see quite a lot of leakage come through in this area because of poor project management discipline, where there's no execution, there's no planning, when the suppliers have not executed in line with the contract, there's no consequences that follow. Projects are concluded at amounts that are highly expensive, some are not even concluded. There's a lot of that we are picking up. And then we're picking up also cancellation costs on travel. Bookings made and cancellations. Bookings are made when people don't even travel to those destinations. We then are also picking up areas where there's damage to state property due to negligence. So these are mainly the trends, if you were to summarize it in the form of trends that we are picking up in this slide. If we can move to the next slide. So on the area of material irregularity, honorable Uterezi, I thought it was important that we just start this conversation by just reminding ourselves, it's still a new process. It was affected in April 2019, so it's hardly 3 years old. Even a tiger that's 3 years old, you can imagine how old and how tall value. So this is how all these instruments be. So what is it? Let's just remind ourselves, even at the office, though we do this daily, but we continuously go back to remind ourselves of exactly what it is. Basically, a material irregularity would be a non-compliance or a contravention of legislation. So there is a non-compliance or contravention of the legislation, or fraud, or theft, or there was breach of a fiduciary duty, and this must have been identified during the audit, number one. Number two, so the distinguishing factor between the irregularity, irregular expenditure, and the material irregularity is this aspect that I'm talking about. So we must have identified this, but it must have resulted or ought to result into a material financial. So there's a loss attached to it. There's an irregularity, and then also there's a loss attached to it. We've expanded this definition in the last year, in the previous year, when we added areas where there could be misuse or loss of material public resources, number one, or substantial harm to the public sector, institution, or general public. So those are areas where there won't be a direct financial loss attached to it, but there could be substantial harm. Instances like water treatment, when municipalities are not diligent in the area of water treatment, and then the consequences then around whether the quality of the water is affected. So those are the other material irregularities that we added in the previous year. So what does this say in terms of the change? We have to remind ourselves of this. So we were given this power to then issue a notification. Once it's identified, it came out, to then issue a notification to the accounting office or to the accounting authority to issue a notification. When we are not satisfied with how they are then implementing those notifications, then the powers and power are to say that MI to the relevant public, to the SIU, to the top. So we've got relationships for anyone who we do, it goes with the weekend extended time to take of the months that we will issue. Or we can recommend action. Once we know that the accounting officer will implement it, we can recommend the action to resolve the MI. So we elevate and issue what we call recommendation. Notification, recommendation. Again, we give accounting officers enough time to implement. We then go back and assess whether those recommendations are actually, when we're not satisfied, the power empower the AG to actually then issue binding remedial action. So this is more or less the stage, the best stage of the change. And it's a stage that for us doesn't define success. For us, success is when you issue this notice the first time and the accounting office, accounting authority, implement all or resolve the material irregularity. Then we are successful if they are successfully implemented. But if we are not picking up progress and happy with the implementation, then we keep elevating to the next level. Then last stage being, of course, the issuing of the certificate of. These are the ones where there will be a direct financial loss specific to the material irregularity, and you have been given enough chance, because this is a legal process. You have to be given enough chance, enough stages to implement all the notifications, recommendations, the remedial action. If the AG is not satisfied with the action that the accounting officer will take, then can issue a certificate of it. And I think it was important just to highlight the success, because there's expectation by the citizens, by the stakeholders, that we should be issuing a certificate of sale. And we are going to issue a certificate of sale in the event that the accounting officer doesn't act on the notification. But for us, that's not successful. For us, we are successful when the material is has been resolved in line with how we would have recommended it to be resolved. Right. If you can move to the next slide, so in terms of this journey, honorable, we first just have updates not only for the national only, but had in this process in staggered fashion. Started off by implementing it only on 15 positions last year, because we were also testing the change management processes in the organization and also training our own staff so that we are digitally implemented every month. So as we are currently last year, that is in 2021, 15 October 2021, we had notified on 233, so we had issued 233 notifications for material management. And then as we speak now, as we report now, prior to finalizing our CSME report, that is, as at the 15th of April 2022, we were with a 3.7 MI. You'll see that the number of MIs and the OGCs don't talk to each other. There's no error there. You'll find that in some OGCs, there'll be more than one material issue. So there's no error there. So there were 372 OGCs where we had issued about 3.7 MI. And in that event, by 15 April 2022, 10 of the MI resolved. So of these amounts that have been issued, the estimated financial loss to date comes to 14.7 million. So all these amounts, in terms of where we could quantify the financial loss, it comes to 14.7 million. And then spread across the spheres of local government, we have issued 185 amounts for local government. It's an estimated loss of 3.9 million. For provincial government, 82 MI, it's an estimated loss of 2.1 million. And the national government, which is the business of committee, is issued 60 MI, translating to a financial loss of 8.6 billion. Right. Around the state of all the MI as they are. And honorable, something I needed to say before I talk to this MI, we have supplemented the slides last night. I think there's two slides that we both have in your care, the first one and this one. Because we thought, let's not just jump to talk about the 60 MI that are the business of the community, but let's just start by giving you an overview of this environment so that you have a picture of how it is. Okay. Mokoboy, if you can move to the next slide. Right. Okay. Now, on this MI, what is it that we have found? So again, this is still the overall picture. Maybe let's go to the next picture when we talk to the National Department for business of today. Mokoboy, and move to the next one. So if we drill deeper to the business of today, Honorable Mutelis, where did we find this material that speaks to this environment, estimated as a financial loss of 8.6 million? Bulk of them are in the procurement and payment environment. As you would recall, when these powers were extended, it was meant to deal with lack of consequence management, in particular for this area of supply chain. And again, indeed, if we stratify this MI and do a deep dive, bulk of them are in the procurement and in the payment space, and then some, there's a few in the resource and management space, a few in the revenue management, and also a few in the interest and penalties, and just one that speaks to growth and compliance. And then coming back to the ones that speak to the performance and payment environment. Of course, 17 and 1, which is 18, speak directly to the performance environment. Where there was non-compliance with the performance processes, either there was overpricing, the output, or suppliers that were not properly appointed, or suppliers that did not deliver on what they appointed to deliver. And then on the payment, aside, so page 2 that we have raised where payment of goods and now on the what we have seen in terms of the impact, we have seen success. Honorable, we can even share the details of those successes positively. When the loss of work is in financial loss and because of the MI. We have even seen instances where some contracts were actually even cancelled even way before we issued the MI. And this is when we see the effectiveness of this instrument. As soon as the accounting officer got to know that there will be an MI that is issued, the contract was terminated even before they entered into. We have seen also instances where systems of internal control have been improved, or the manner in which they safeguard the assets and the payment algorithm has also been improved to prevent governance. And we have seen many, many cases where officials actually are being disciplined and investigations are being instituted, and also other supplier contracts are cancelled. So when we say 5 of the MIs are resolved in this year, we are referring to either the loss was prevented, or the internal control were improved, or the investigation, as it is noted in the notification, investigations were implemented, or disciplinary processes were implemented. So that's what we mean when we say the 5 MIs were resolved. However, of the 5, 36. On the 36th, appropriate action is still being taken, meaning they are still going through their phases. Either they are still in the first phase of the notification or in the recommendation phase. And then there's 3 that are in the recommendation phase, and then there's 2 that are actually in the remedial phase. That is the kind of process. It is important, honorable, as I close on this conversation of the MI, remember, this journey may include the AT issue. We are not there yet, because we are all aware that and of course that accounting officer an opportunity to implement the level 35 in the energy of our power. Recommendation for remedial action. So we are not yet at the certificate of death. But just to highlight to the committee the challenges that we then come across as we navigate these powers, as we implement these powers. From the auditing perspective, the issue of completion of investigation in some cases is taking so long. So investigations take so long to be completed. And then secondly, the disciplinary processes also for responsible officers also take so very long. So we are picking up those issues as we are implementing. Another area that is of concern is the instability in the accounting officers or accounting authorities, where you would have issued a notification, an MI, to one accounting officer, and then their term ends, and then you are back to the drawing board to issue it to the accounting officer that is replacing the one that was executed. So we are coming across those kinds of delays. There are also external delays where we would expect the completion of the investigation by the SIU and the HOC. We are still delayed, and we sympathize because they are juggling so many borders, so many investigations that they are juggling with, and we are including onto their list. So we do sympathize with what we see. We are also seeing instances where the delays around the covering by the state attorney. And the most certainly of these delays where suppliers would have been litigated by the time either the HOC or the SIU get involved, suppliers are no longer in existence. So those are the issues that I thought let's bring them to your attention just to indicate that as we are implementing and we believe we are effective, but there are challenges that we usually then come across as the there's just a journey map there. It's it's not that important, but that gives you the step towards a certificate of death. That it's not something that you issue a notification and then the following month you issue a certificate of death. There is a journey that we need to go through, and that time requires us giving the accounting officer an opportunity to implement the actions that we have been notified, or the communication that we have seen, or the remedial actions of the AG So that is the journey on the MR. Honorable, if you can move on to the next one. Okay. So I think I did, as I was speaking about the successes, I did talk about the actions that we are picking up on the ground, where we would have notified that the billing is taking place, and we are picking up that the improvement in the control environment, the billing is taking place, and the revenue management is better than we would have identified before. I did talk about the suppliers that were also discussing as soon as we issued the material irregularity, and cases where we are seeing fraud and criminal investigations being instituted and disciplinary processes being concluded. And then you would have picked up honorable in the previous SGR that our AG just released most recently, that there were cases where we have issued MI for repeat disclaimers in harm to municipalities. So I think it's one of the areas we were actually identified of. And we have issued other MIs in the past where we're submitting ASA. Consistently, mainly in the Northwestern and the Pacific, and we are beginning to see that behavior change as we are engaging with the community. All right, if you can move, Mokopon. I think this is going to be the last slide. We said let's bring this area to your attention when we are picking up there is infrastructure grants, mainly to these departments within the settlement, the schools, a backlog project, the education infrastructure project, and the health and facility project. As you can pick up from the slide, in most of the cases, the budget is digitalized in full. There are cases where the auditors are under budget, and there are cases where they are on budget. Right. However, what we wanted to highlight now, in line with what you raised when you were introducing this news, what services don't reach the people on the ground, and you said it's women one, and these are the women that spend a better kind of services that can reach them. All the children in the school that bear the brand of the services that she spent, or in the hospital. Right. But what we are picking up in the main around the implementation of projects is that the project management issue in the environment, which are often delayed in the condition of the project. And we are seeing that the project cost actually they escalate to levels that exceed the budget for those projects. In some cases, leading to financial losses. We are also seeking, in cases where they do deliver, that quality would be deficient, so the quality effect that we are picking up. In some cases, we are picking up that houses will be completed or commissioned, but they are not utilized because there are services that the municipality should have implemented, like the water services, that was not implemented. So in terms of this project efficiency, it will be a bit deeper now into what are these issues that we are talking about project management issues. We are talking about where there is inability to actually do the new successes, like project planning, just those simple disciplines. And sometimes they don't monitor, you know, projects, the one we can monitor milestones if they are being met by the contractor or by the implementing agent. And in cases where there's underperformance by contractor, there are no consequences in the cases. And we are also keeping our cases where contractors are automatically in time. Right. And the impact is clear. I don't think I need to emphasize this again. Who bears the burden? What's the kind of impact must we see? The continued shortage of housing, the quality of the schools, the infrastructure in the schools, the access to health facilities by the citizens continues to be affected. The citizens continue to bear the brunt of the poor management of the quality of the infrastructure, the useful life of these houses that will be built would be even shorter. And in some cases, exposing the public to harm while picking out that money, of course, is that money could have been spent in other infrastructure. Right. So that takes me, Honorable Chair, to another slide, which is important. You can move this slide more over. Remember in the beginning when I was introducing this conversation, I talked about us being in this accountability ecosystem together. And it was important that we map out who is in this ecosystem. And at the center of this ecosystem is the citizen, of course. And we have identified every role player in the system together with what is it that they need to do to ensure that they also support. If it is parliament or provincial legislature, if it is COA, what role can you play to ensure that the services reach the citizens? What role can you play in shifting the culture? As I said earlier on, the AG has introduced a strategy whereby 2030 they want to have shifted the culture. And in that strategy, they identify positives and they categorize them into various categories. Positives that are doing harm, positives that are doing nothing, positives that need to be shifted to do good. So we have identified and categorized all those positives, and we have a target to shift bulk of them by 2030 to a category where they start to doing good. From doing harm to doing good. And we do recognize that we will not achieve that strategy. And we are not alone in this ecosystem. We will do our best to offer you with the impact. We will do our best to influence when we care. We will do our best to accelerate enforcement of our power, the power that I talked about just now. But each and everyone in this market has got a role to play. And there's a saying that actually you are as strong as your weakest link. Meaning if there is a weakest link in this model, we need to pull up that weakest link so that they begin to implement their money to properly adhere to the roles and responsibilities that their mandate dictates them to do. And when we are all strong in this model, the citizen on the ground will experience the services and the promises that are located in the constitution. So this is the context of this accountability ecosystem. It needs to balance. I think that is the message. It has to be balanced. Everyone has got to perform their roles and responsibilities so that the citizens can benefit at the end of the day. Be it the internal audit function, be it the audit committee, the accounting officers, everyone has got to pull up and implement their role. We all have to be successful. We can do as much as we can as the Office of the Auditor General, but if there is an element that is weak in this ecosystem, the citizen will be the one that bears the brunt. So that is the context of this accountability ecosystem. It does recognize that we need culture shift partners. We cannot be alone in this journey of shifting the culture by 2030. We all need one another in this game. Our success is a success, and at the end of the day, it is a success to us to deliver prosperity to the citizens. Right. So the last slide, Chairperson, as I told, I'm mindful of time now. It's more a call to action from our perspective. what is it that I'm commending? One, let me start by appreciating this engagement. It's highly appreciated for us to demonstrate what I talked about, which is located in our vision. It demonstrates that this quality wants to enable and we need to ensure that we strengthen the work together by ensuring that we afford you with all the support so that we can make all of that. And what we are recommending in our situation, we need to go back to the time and turn the time of positive management. We need to go back to ensure that we implement these consequences as per the legislation, especially the process in which we get clear on what needs to be done and not. We need that discipline to comply with the legislation and avoid execution. We need a new culture where we comply, a culture of compliance with legislation and a culture of avoidance of litigation. And we want to recommend that this committee continues to hold all relevant roles there in the accountability ecosystem to account, as I've shown the ecosystem in the area of life. So we want to recommend that we continue to hold them to account on how they're utilizing these funds. We also are recommending that the committee must use the insights that we share with them so that we can enhance it, so that we can enhance the vision policy statement. So in the main executive, that is the message that everyone is to share and to today around what you have asked us to come and provide. Thank you so very much. Back to you.
Ms. Roma and the team, thank you very much for the presentation. A few comments on my one. Let me just assure you that as the standing committee on appropriation, we really appreciate your role in the accountability ecosystem, and we also wanted to play our role, and we can only play our role effectively and efficiently if we share information. So today's engagement with your yourselves is meant just for that, so that we have got information, we know, so that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, and because people who are having devious intention, they usually exploit the fact that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So from our side, as a committee and parliament in general, we really would like to be a strong partner in this accountability ecosystem, as you put it. Again, one thing that we realize which is not of your making is that in most cases, auditors their intervention is post facto. The thing has happened, but I'm sure being post facto this year should come first in the following year, because the thing that you raised this year should be addressed in the following year. So it's very important that there should be follow up on the matters and issues that you raised in the different ODTs. It is a worrying factor that we are saying that the graph of wasteful and fruitless expenditure, you can't say what is the trend, because it means it's neither fish nor fowl. It means you can't say whether I'm improving or not improving, which is not good, because from our side, we would like to see an improvement. You don't want to see the ups and downs. Again, it's more about accounting authorities and their and their institution to make sure that that happens. Or you come in and say, has it done this and so on, but the primary responsibility lies with the executive office by the accounting authority and so on and so forth. So we take that. So with those words, just want to say that we really appreciate the presentation and think we are a leading partner in this ecosystem. Honourable members, you know how we do. Can I get indications of the honourable members who would like to have a bite on what has been presented by PAGSA?
Chair, Honourable Sarupan.
Number one.
Sheikh Imam, Chairperson.
Honorable Sheikh Imam. I know I owe you a call, Honorable Sheikh Imam.
I was going to report that to the Auditor General, Chairperson.
Please don't. You may issue an MI SAP, so just hold on that and give you a shout. Kaiso, Honorable Kaiso.
Kwankwa, Chair.
Honorable Kwankwa. Honorable members, any other member? Okay. Let's start this 5 minutes and see how far we go.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me just reiterate the comments that you have made about the key role that the AG plays. I share that entirely, and I want to thank the AG for all of their good work. Chair, with regards to the causes of wasteful and fruitless expenditure as identified by the AG, and I'm going to just hone in on a couple of them. Firstly, weak project management, which results in standing down costs. I'm sure project management, weak project management, has other consequences. In the AG's longitudinal view, since they've been looking at this for years now, is project management capacity in government actually improving or getting worse over time? And I'd like to get their take on that. With regards to unoccupied property, similar, is property and facilities management getting better and worse over time? And then just with regards to negligence, are they seeing an improvement? Then, Chair, with regards to the recommendations that the AG does make to accounting officers, and then when they fail, if they get given directives, how frequently do they find that their recommendations are not followed through on? And even where they are followed through, do they find that there is compliance? Or if there isn't compliance, what sort of remedial actions do they find they have to take? Where there is compliance, what is the policy of compliance with the remedial actions? Is the remedial actions taken just to placate the AG, or is it actually done in a meaningful way? And then with regards to material irregularities brought to the attention of accounting officers, what have they found are the biggest weaknesses that cause these material irregularities? That accounting officers don't actually follow up on. And they've got the list on the slides, I think it's slide 8, but these are obviously things that accounting officers either fix or don't fix. What are the ones that accounting officers tend to not get on top of? And what have they found is the good incentive to get accounting officers to actually get on top of these issues? I think let me leave it at that, Chair. I'm sure the rest of the committee will have lots of questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Tarukhan. Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm on the road, so I just stopped inside to put some questions. But thank you very much. I see when you started this morning, Chair, I'm not sure whether your spouse might have given you a directive, because you were praising women. It was all about women when you started this morning, Chair. On a more serious note, Chairperson. One of my questions to the AG, first of all, allow me to thank you for the fantastic work you are doing. Despite there being some amendments to the Act giving you more power, could you tell us whether this is sufficient, or you believe that you need to be empowered a lot more to be able to deal particularly with this non-compliance. Secondly, I must agree with you, there is a massive problem, Jefferson, when it comes to the issue of escalation. We are finding more and more, and particularly, you know, in terms of construction sites and building of housing and where the moment they get onto the site, the prices increase, even though you have geotech reports and things. They will tell you things like, I know Fonubia was one ideal example. They found rock there, and that contract had gone up by millions of rand before they even started. So there seems to be an abuse as far as escalation. What measures do you believe we should put in place to try and mitigate against or try and prevent it? Because I think there's a loophole there for abuse. Now, I've noticed, AG, that you repeatedly raised the question of repeat offenders. I call them from a criminal aspect. I regard them as repeat offenders. And what we found from the criminal justice system, a lot of the crime is committed by repeat offenders, and it seems to be exactly the same thing here. Now, and I know you're saying that consequence management is a problem, or it tends the disciplinary processes are taking too long. Do you believe that we have the will to do it? Or what do you believe should be done to try and accelerate that process? Because, you know, my concern is this, that people get suspended from their positions. But there's no deterrent because they get suspended with full pay. And by the time you find them guilty, their contracts have come to an end, they've been received full pay, you get nothing back out of them. I don't know, and I think I agree with the chair when he says that you're working in silos. Maybe with the criminal justice system needs to be aligned with departments so that when we have challenges of this nature, and like you've given an example of companies that have might have unduly benefited, end up liquidating, very conveniently many of them liquidate, so you know, you don't get anything back from them. You know, whether something should happen or something should be done so that these people don't just get away with it. But lastly, I want to say, how do we, as the Standing Committee on Appropriations, you know, what can we do to strengthen your powers or to work more closer with you to be able to identify all these people, but specifics, and I'm talking about specifics, if we go to local government, if there's a CFO there or an accounting officer that has been year after year, you know, he's been having findings against him or his department, you know, whether there is any process. I know I've asked this before, Chairperson, to give us names, specific names of culprits on the ground, repeat offenders, so that we could deal with them. So maybe this committee can go there and follow it up until they are dealt with. So if you can just, you know, some of those things will help. But thank you very much for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam, Honorable Kaiso. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the Office of the Auditor General for a briefing to the committee. And we indeed appreciate this well-detailed report. And it will enable us to, you know, get into to make inroads as to how, what areas to also to assist, you know, in order to also, you know, give support to the Office of the Auditor General out of the report that we're receiving as a committee. But let me start here as well, Chairperson, that we have been receiving, we once received a briefing from the Office of the Auditor General. And that report was detailing a number of areas which are of concern to that office. You know, I don't know, some of those areas are still reflective as to this juncture. I just want to go back to make reference to one that was referring to, you know, the instability, for instance, in political instability that begin to play itself in the municipalities, etc., or influence. As to what an extent is now, has the office now picked up that attendance or intervention is now beginning to take place, or it's still with the status quo, etc. I'm trying to go back because those were some of the overarching reasons that were raised in one report that was given before this report. So I don't know to what extent you comment around that. Is there any improvement that you now see since that report and it's been added? I think, Chairperson, we need to make a very firm proposal with regard to how people operate or this department operate in future. As we meet with them, I think we have to make a precondition as we receiving or briefing from the department. Maybe one is to demand before a presentation that firstly the department must tell us about expenditure, especially where we notice under expenditure. We must start there, not to receive a report which says a department, how are we going to intensify it to understand. No, it must start where we ended to say, last time when we made presentation, there was an issue on understanding as to what improvement have you made before you make a request in order to deal with this area that the auditor general is also referring to, which are related to infrastructure grants, not being utilized properly, schools backlog, etc. I think you should make it standard in the committee that before you present the department, tell us first about that understanding and how have you improved, not intensified, understanding. So if there's any improvement, then we can entertain that department its request for adjustment or whatever that the department is requesting. Otherwise, we are going to do we're going to move in circles around the department. Two is that I think the issue of performance contract, it's very clear that if this issue of performance contract does not include these areas which the Auditor General is talking about, this problem or this challenge of poor performance with regards to expenditure or under expenditure or these abnormalities that we see in the Auditor General's report, schools backlog, infrastructure grants under inadequate non-payment of service providers in 30 days, etc. They are not going to move away from before us. So if they are not included, I don't know what the Office of the Auditor General think around the issue of performance contract being attached to all these critical areas, which in fact they were supposed to be part of the officials who are executing this mandate in terms of PFMA, that they take responsibility. Because it is the PFMA that says you spend, you account, you do this and that and that. So it means that automatically must come into your performance of contract. But I don't see any reason or any improvement in the absence of the performance contract. There would be consequent management, enough consequent management happening there. Because I can see here, as the report is being presented, people have taken advantage of the absence of certain, conditions which are part of the performance contract. So they are spot free. So if there's any non-expenditure, or if there's for instance, schools backlog, infrastructure, poor infrastructure, it's not improving, or Western property is being damaged, property is not occupied, houses are not being built, all this, it's scot-free. An official can just relax. The accounting officer there will just relax, no consequence, but the auditor will just come one day, visit, and take note of that without consequence. So I won't be surprised if there aren't enough consequence management methods against those officials. If these have not been included in their performance contract as officials of the government. So I just want to know, understand what is the intake of the Office of the Auditor General in as far as not being able to include performance contract, including all these areas of critical concern in their performance contract, will make any sense. For me, I don't think they will make any sense in as far as. Maybe it is also to get an understanding from the Office of the Auditor General how many of the affected officials and accounting officials who have been subjected to disciplinary measures for failing to enforce Section 38 and 40 of the Public Finance Management Act. I think it's very, very much important to get that from the Office of the Auditor General. Now, I also want to check from the Office of the Auditor General. So on slide 6, there is a notable and impressive drop in the value of food debt and wasteful expenditure from 132.6 million to 625.9 million. So what factors could have contributed to this improvement in the periods of 2017 to 2017-18? So maybe I just wanted to get that through you, Honorable Chair. Yeah, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Pankwan.
Chairperson, with your permission, may I contribute with my video switched off?
Perfect.
Thank you, sir. Chair, well, Honorable Kaiso and Honorable Sheikh Imam have to a large extent taken the words out of my mouth. Because the issue I wanted to cite that without a clear performance contract that clearly outlines the responsibilities of the accounting office. Because remember, the way I understand it in the private sector, your performance agreement or performance monthly contract as an accounting officer is then cascaded down to the relevant and the different executives in the department. So each person takes responsibility for an aspect of your performance management or strategic goals of the department that are linked to the contract. I think the biggest challenge that is there in order to ensure consequence management is that there are any clear performance management contracts that binds people to certain aspects of performance, which will ensure that we get the outcomes that we require, whether it's at the end of the quarter or end of. Yeah. Now what happens is, because there is that weakness in the system, it's almost like now the Auditor General has the responsibility of performance managing it and flagging issues of consequence management in the event where there's poor performance or failure to comply with the purposes of legislation. I think it's our failure. I think it's something that we need to address and make sure that we work on it very hard and to be clarified and done properly. But I also think, Chairperson, perhaps the National Treasury in this discussion needs to be paired up somewhat. They're a complementary role to the Office of the Auditor General. Remember the Auditor General, they would look at what you have done. They're more backward looking at reports, whether things were done properly. But the people who are supposed to be protected and ensure that these things are done properly would be your treasurer to say this is procurement to help the people who have the capacity to be able to do this work, is what they are doing in line with the relevant legislation and so on. When it comes to procurement and the management of finances, I think there needs to be a lot of pairing up that needs to take place between the two entities. You are talking about this department and us in general working in silos. I think we need to find a way in which we can play a more complementary role. I'm happy to hear that the Auditor's Office of the Auditor General started using powers that we gave in 2016 when we are trying to give them more teeth in order to fight corruption. But indeed, I think Honorable Imam is quite right to say that it's important that they give us a sense of what has happened. We've been given a sense of what, from an activity point of view, what has been implemented and what has been done. But I think as we implement the legislation, we need to be given an update as to whether more powers are required, whether they need more teeth, whether some processes can be streamlined. And making this point mindful of the fact that they still have to treat the account of the entire process, meaning it won't be as fast as we would hope it to be. It's going to take its own course, but I think it's important for us to document all the lessons that we learn on the process to see how it can improve, how can the process, and we can make sure that it's faster, that people are helped to account quicker, so that there's no, we don't find ourselves in a position similar to where we're, Honorable Kaiso was talking about the disciplinary hearing, where people are suspended, I think it was going to shake him up. All of those issues, so that when we engage on a regular basis, we know exactly what is expected of us to come. I cannot, perhaps it's a little bit of a side issue, I cannot understand for the life of me how a person can book flights, as the presenter made an example. You book flights and people don't teach up. There's no accountability as to whether and why the flight is cancelled or the flight postponed. I mean, in Parliament, I'm making this example, if I book a flight, so say I agree to go on oversight, and I don't teach, that gift they get from my salary on the 15th, next day run, they take that money, the amount of money that's lost, because they say they can't even care where to expense because of an irresponsible MP. So we should also be moving along those lines to make sure that everyone actually kills the pitch for wasting state resources. Thank you very much.
Honorable
Conker,
thank you very much. Any other honourable member who would like to have a second bite? Honourable Sarukel?
No, thanks, Chair. I'm covered.
Honourable Sheikh Imam? Honourable Kaiso? No, I'm covered, Chair. Honourable Kanka, anything that has come up in the last minute or two?
Aye. Jambule Lakshan.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member, for your question. Let me add to the basket of the AG. Let me start by this one. I think in this committee, we have raised the issue of the quality of project management skills in government in general. And that becomes very clear when you deal with the infrastructure program. The escalation of costs, even a big SOEs, if you look at what happened at Kusile and the NUPP, the escalation there went into billions, more than 150 billion over the budget. So you may as well say there was no budget there. You can't have a 100% escalation of the project. So we've raised this issue before. But I must say, honourable member, that I don't think that we've had a response in terms of implementation of this type of training. Because all departments, not just those who implement infrastructure programs, which is very important, even more important to them. All of them should project management skills are critical for service delivery of any nature. So, honourable members, emanate from a depository of these skills in government, and we seem not to get the indication that something is done about them. Related to this is a question of contract management skills. You see, I know of certain companies who go in with their lawyers on the first day to negotiate with government. They get top lawyers so that they make sure that they catch you in the type of contract that you sign, right? And I have all the rules. But you, as a person who's paid, you find that your hands are tied. So it's one skill, again, that the contract management skills are also the key as far as we are concerned. And again, other members, I think it's an area that we should follow up and get from the department what are they doing to try and deal with this issue. And we are identifying this project management scheme as one of the causal factors for the condition of COP. But I just want to check with this now comes to AG. What do you think the impact of the PSA is on cost escalation for friends are 28 room and the 1090 room? Basically, where people come in with the lowest price, but they factor in all these things before you know, before the project ends, you find that the price is the highest of all of them. That's a cabinet scheme. I hope you get my question. Number two, late payment of service providers. What do you think is the main contributor effect? And do you see your auditees paying your small service providers, especially the new companies, any interest for late payment? My hypothesis is that only big companies are paid interest for late payment, but small companies who need that money more than big companies are always a prejudice when it comes to this. But I would like to hear your comment. Another question, what do you think in terms of heightened over of management in these entities is? Perhaps related to this is an error which has been raised by Honorable Sheikh Imam. The question of suspending of officials when it takes too long. You know, you've got officials who have been suspended for 5 years. They say there's a culture in government and the public sector in general who says they suspend and investigate, where people are suspended without cases, and then people start the question of investigating thereafter, and that depends on the length of the time that people are suspended. Also, there's a question of new sheriff in town. He or she comes, and then she starts paging people who are in the organization who have been there. And the easiest way of paging them is to put them on suspension and let everybody active. And those people would know that they've been appointed by the police, therefore they own their allegiance to the police. So how prevalent is this thing where people are being paged, suspended because of nothing else but just of paging them, so that people get liable to people in their position? I've heard the number in a number of places where you basically shut up charges, no substance whatsoever, hence such a long time in terms of people being paid to stay at home. And perhaps what would you recommend for people that, for instance, an accounting officer who put people into suspension for a long time, and after that they come back and they are not found guilty. What do you think we should do to try and discourage that practice? Because it not just about wasteful and fruitless expenditure, but it also denies the organization of the skills that it has developed over the years. But I would like to hear what the AG is commenting on that. Elephant in the room, the National Treasury, IFMS, it is concerning that National Treasury comes up very high in the list of departments with wasteful and fruitless expenditure, because we are expecting them to be playing an oversight role there. So your comment on that, Pat, I think AG, I've heard this IFMS thing for many years, but it seems not coming to an end. Can we, from your perspective, hear what exactly is happening with IFMS? If not now, can we have a full report on what is happening in IFMS? The money that we have spent in IFMS, and what is this project has been spent now? And whether anyone who has accountable for IFMS as digital treasure. Those would be my input, and back to you, AG. You decide to be a team who answers questions. You only bring back the meeting to me once you have attended to all the things that have been raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Leslie. I do note that some of the questions overlap with one another, so I'll try and combine my responses with those cases where they talk to one another. So I'll start with Honorable Sarukhan's questions on the capacity. Is the capacity improving or is it getting worse? And it also talks to in the area of properties and facilities management, are we seeing improvement? Honorable, if I may say, what is encouraging from the work that we did in the last capital cycle was to note the actions that were taken by the minister to address the recommendations that we had raised in this environment, especially in the areas of facilities and business where there was a leakage where we were sick, not occupied, and in instances where actually leases were escalating at levels that were significantly higher than inflation. We saw action that was encouraging by the minister in cabinet and implementing the recommendations that we had raised in this area. And then there was a question on the recommendations to say, are they being followed through, especially on the new powers, are the recommendations being implemented? So it's a mixed bag. I must say it's a mixed bag. There are cases that are encouraging where we are seeing MIs being resolved.
Ms. Ngoma? Then who born?
Oh, I'm not a robot. Can you send me check?
Very, very clear, yes, thank you. The people of, yeah, we can see you.
All right.
Yeah, the people of South Africa want to see their bodies, their books. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for reminding me. So this one is a mixed bag. As I said, the powers are still new. They are just over 3 years old in terms of implementation. They were effective from April 2019. So we are beginning to see accounting officers implementing the actions that we would have raised in the notification and also in the recommendation. But having said that, there are pockets of areas where we are still delayed. I think there's a slide there where I talk about the delay from the auditor side, where one, accounting officers are not stable in their roles. They change and the new accounting officers are appointed, and that tends to delay the process of implementing these powers, because we then have to notify, issue a notification again to the new accounting officer, depending on any event at what stage that MI process was. So we are keeping up on this. Also on the investigations, we have seen quite a lot of delays. The investigations by their nature, because the various stages, there would be the issuing of charges stage, there would be the summoning stage, the investigation stage, the disciplinary stage. So we are noticing that with all these stages, the progress is not as fast and as quick as we would want it to be. But having said that, because this is a legal process, we do then afford these accounting officers to implement this action in line with all the steps that are required, so that this doesn't require for us in the end. So there are those pockets of delays that we do not in the situation. And then coming to Honorable, I think it was Honorable Ahmed was driving. The one question on the consequence management on the repeat offenders.
Sorry, Mr. Robert. The main of the question is Honorable Sheikh Imam.
So you were saying, is there a will? I think these questions, they talk to one another in terms of the responses that I have provided. And you also posed an important question to say, are we working in silos? So you are basically referring to this committee to say, what is it that you can do to also perhaps harmonize and collaborate with these public bodies, your SIU, your HOC, back of the mind for relationship, where you can invite them to be part and parcel of the law briefing, to give you feedback on the cases that you would have referred to them, to sort of, not to use the word demand, but demand accountability on where they are and what the delays are in implementing or in perspective the cases that have been referred. I do think that, because you mentioned the big way to the side of website, if you were to collaborate and invite them to give you data, and then maybe get lessons on where you can come in as this committee to unlock the bottleneck. Maybe the second point is to understand what are the bottleneck, and when can you unlock the bottleneck. I think the question of strengthening, not strengthening our powers per se, but strengthening the work that we do, that tactic can go a long way, where you invite these public bodies to give you feedback on the progress and of this case. Then the one question again speaks to consequence management. I think I want to address this one in totality. It was saying, are there instances where the state has not done enough to enforce consequence management, which department seems to show the highest rate of improvement? So we have noted, Chairperson, in our previous general report, at least 43 of the teams that registered an improvement in the discipline to comply with the legislative requirements. And from this department, if I was to just highlight, there were two national departments consisting of the Civilian Secretariat for Police and the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, IPID. So we did note the improvement around this, and some of the good practices that we have noted that allow improvement are ability in officials. So it's necessary. I think this question is where to see that. The question of consequence management is the stability in officials. In cases where consequences are implemented, we do know that it is usually associated with the stability in officials with necessary skills. And in those cases, the action plans would be monitored by management. They would check not only our findings, but they will check internal audit findings together with the oversight that will be provided by the audit committee. So I think I've dealt now with the question of compliance management. Coming to the question of Honorable Kaiso, I don't know if I've said it well, Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, you're correct.
All right. There was a question on the understanding by OTC and whether this committee can call them to account. We welcome that. I think if you look at that accountability model, that is where we can begin to strengthen one another. When we raise these issues and then you invite them to account on understanding. There's understanding and then there's no delivery of services. So we would really welcome that recommendation. And then there was a question of instability. I want to address it. I've got a graph here. Yes, I want to refer to very quickly. Instability in people in critical roles. And I think you also, Honorable, talked to that question, Honorable Mutele, you asked the very same question. There are concerns that we are picking up around vacancies in key positions. Maybe this is an area as well that this committee can take note of and can call the accounting officers to account on these vacancies on key positions. So in the year 2021, though there's been improvement, okay, let's start from 2018-19, the vacancies on key officials were at 39%, and then in 1920 those vacancies were at 37%, then in 2021 they were at 33%. We will be able to provide an update after we have finalized this cycle of the PSMA on where we are on these vacancies. But to have vacancies of this level, one third of critical positions are vacant, Chairperson, speak to all these issues that we have been talking about, because we do know that capability enables accountability. So once there are vacancies and then you have people active, then that is where the accountability gets to be distorted. And then Honorable Mwangwa and also Honorable Guys spoke about the same issue of performance contracts, which I think Honorable Mwangwa responded to that issue I think the question was to say, is there a need to ensure that there are performance contracts in place for these officials in critical positions in particular? And then Honorable Mwangwa responded to that question to say, over and above that, so there is a need, because there's a saying that what does not get measured doesn't get done. So there's a standard thing. Because these deliverables, these measurements and indicators, performance indicators, are not in the performance contract, they've got nothing that you can hold them to account against. What do you hold them to account against? What is it that they need to deliver at the end of their period if we don't formalize the performance contract? And then there is another subject that I wanted to link this question with, the subject of ACP, the annual performance plan of this department. It's an area that the office is beginning to put a spotlight on Honorable Utility, where we are now auditing and testing whether there is actually congruent correspondent alignment between the mandate of the department and the annual performance plan, the target that they will implement. I think in many of the cases we have noted in the past that the APP do not talk to the mandate of that department, and then the service delivery will suffer at the end of the day. So this is an area that we want to invite the committee, where possible and practical, to really also play an oversight, a rigorous oversight around. And when you play that oversight, because you are also on the budget allocation side, you hold a very powerful role to ensure that these targets, they speak to their mandate, number one, and what will be delivered, what will be the impact of these targets that are located in the ACC. Will they address the service delivery issues that are on the ground? And if you can be involved at the approval stage of these ACCs, I do believe our accountability eco-model and the outcome, therefore, will be strengthened on our position. And then, Honorable Kwanga asked a question on the power themselves, on the demand. What is it that has been implemented? So I want to invite myself to submit to you, Chairperson, to have a follow-up report where we submit exactly with the details. Because I have said in the presentation, five has been resolved. Maybe let's share those examples and let's share those practices. Because Honorable Kwanga also talked about the need to document all the lessons. So let's share those five that have been resolved. What are they? We or the team? What is it? When you say resolve, what do we mean? And then those also that are still outstanding, so that we can assist with the oversight around those loans. And then coming to your thanks, Honorable Guterres, a long list of questions from your side. I think you're spot on there where you elevated. I hear you clearly elevating the issue of quality of project management is in the current and truly appreciated that this area is being elevated here. And I heard you talk about the intervention, various interventions that you have implemented, like the training to capacitate and to scale this environment. Maybe we need to then elevate it a bit further now to establish that it's a cause and then to account, invite them at this department to account on whether the training is taking place and whether you're seeing impact of this training on the ground. You also spoke to the contract management field. It's an area that speaks to the supply chain environment where the implementation of control in this area really is dismal, as you can pick up from the foodless and waste food expenditure slide and also from the MR slide. It's an area that, as you call them to account, they need to account on whether how are they closing this gap that we identify that speak to procurement management skills and contract management. So I'm adding to your list to the chapter. And then on the turnover, honorable of management in policy, it's an area that if you look at the call to actions that we have been raising over the years in our general report, it's one of the recommendations that we have been editing, that one, we need to hire capable and skilled officials. Capability enables accountability. So you must hire capable officials, ethical. Not someone can be capable and not ethical. So capable and ethical officials. Then once you hire the right skills, the right competencies, you allow them a tenure so that they can be able to implement. In those cases where we saw outcomes improve, the internal control environment improve, we were able to associate those OTTs with the ability of management, the ability in heroes, capability, ethical officials, and then stability. That is the recipe for success, honorable. We will then submit to you a chairperson the report on the IFNF. I think we owe it to the committee to do a detailed report of what we are picking up on the what we picked up in the current cycle on the IFNF. But it's an old story where in the main we reported that the National Treasurer's team for this IFNF was not utilized on the ground. So there's no correspondence between the payment and the utilization of the system. And we are still picking up the lack of utilization of that system capacity. Let me pause. In some cases, I sort of grouped the responses because they were if you were to theme them, competent management is at the top. How can you strengthen us to ensure we fast track implementation? As when I said, maybe the public body can invite them to also account. And then there was an area of performance contract. I added the area of ATP. And then we welcome the suggestion of thorough performance management by this committee. And then the area of skills, if you can elevate that area, Jefferson, as you call them to account, as you engage with them, where you identify the positives of project management. This country has got a great policies, great framework, but we are not good at implementing Jefferson. Our problem is in implementation. If you can, as you implement your role, as you strengthen also in line with that accountability cause, if you can be the area that you pay attention on, we all can go a long way in ensuring that the citizens on the farm get the promises that are located in the Constitution. Thank you, Honorable. Back to you.
Thank you, Honorable Ngoma. Okay, thank you so much, Ngoma. Just to remind you, I still want to hear a comment on cost escalation. And I used an example of ESCOM. I also used this thing of the triple PFA, the 80-20 rule and the 90-10 rule, where the lowest price basically gets the contract. But once they are in there for all types of maneuvering that they do, in escalating the cost and so on and so forth. So I just, my point is that the current CCFA as it stands has got a lot of loopholes as far as, because I just wanted to hear what your comment is. That's number one. And number two, again, where I would like to hear a comment is, can you please just confirm that understanding does not result in audit findings? And what do you think the impact of this is on service delivery? Please comment on those things before I come in.
Let me start with the easy one.
Just hold there. Let me, all of the members, anything that you would like to make a follow up to? Honorable Saruten?
No, thank you, Chair. I think everything was the AG side.
Honorable Sheikh Imam? Honorable Kaiso?
No, Chair, I think I'm largely covered by the explanation given above and those issues that we wanted to clarify on.
Thank you.
Other than the one that you have just actually referred to, Honorable Chair, on the issue of, to a certain extent, the office of the Auditor General thinks have these problems or challenges are impacted upon, you know, service delivery. And I want to make a particular reference to the rules of last quality. Yes.
Thank you, Rahul. So, Rahul, anything coming to your mind? Madame Goma, please come in.
Thanks, Honorable. Let me start with the easy one. I think everyone is busy. The underspending, no, we will not raise a finding on that. However, we are picking up a congruence, correspondence between the underspending and the service delivery. On the ground. I think that what from the observation is what's on, and I think an area that is really room into put a spotlight into as this committee as you drive your oversight, rigorous oversight. And then on the triple PSA, let me respond to this one, okay, in the way that we have seen it in the environment. We do notice areas of cost escalation. I think it's one of the things we've highlighted in the infrastructure grant findings. We do not exist. Actually, not that negligible, like significant problem. And when we drill deeper into the cost escalation, it talks again to the area. I think there's a linkage. Your message of quality of projects and management skills is directly linked to this one, where there's poor planning, where there's no consequence management, where contractors are not adhering to their milestones. But we have noted this area of a cost escalation. Maybe I can revert back to you on the question of where they appoint someone with a lower cost. I think that was your question. They appoint someone with a lower cost, so they win the bid because the cost is low, and then it starts to be so that relationship. Maybe let me just come back on that relationship. But you are spot on the cases of cost of escalation, one of the areas that we have identified. And it talks to actually quite a lot of things with they appoint service providers that may not have the skills. So it's quite a lot of things. It's a very end-to-end relationship that must have. There could be a project management issue from the department side. There's also a hiring, a bid appointment issue where they may hire a service provider that does not have the skills to perform the work, but the cost was attractive when they appointed. So I think you are onto something there. I think I addressed now, Chenny.
Yes, you did, Ms. Ngoma. But thank you very much. I'm sure you'll agree with us that we really need to get into this type of engagement. I think let me just reiterate this area. You promised to provide us with a report on the vacancies and key positions, right? Once you have finalized your audit and again, not just the vacancies, but the impact of these vacancies in service delivery of the said entity. You also promised us to provide us with your MI intervention and details thereof. We'll definitely wait for that. And the cost escalation story, again, there's a report that you want to give us. And may I request, Darren, can you please make sure there are a number of other areas that can be used to follow up on? Can you just make sure that for the benefit of the committee, we lift up those things so that we may ensure that we make a proper follow up on them? We would have had the AG saying, please call the said department so that they can be able to give further information and more details on some of the issues that we are raising. And AG, I think our spend is more or less like yours as the appropriations committee, because we literally deal with all the departments. We always say that our mandate, which I think more or less like yours, is that everybody and anybody who receives money from us is our client, from Parliament. Is our client, and those are the auditors that you also deal with. So there's definitely congruence between our mandates as far as your clients are concerned. I think what obviously you gave us the department, right? We think there are many other, in fact, even bigger challenges. When it comes to the SOEs, I think our next engagement, we'd like you to focus on the SOEs and the agencies, and so that we can see how do these problems manifest themselves when it comes to them. So definitely, when we get another opportunity, I will definitely be requesting you to come back with that, because we may as well start working on them. Because we'll definitely be inviting you
you know that our SOEs and our agencies are a big delivery channel for government, especially as it relates to infrastructure. And you know that as government, you have identified infrastructure as a key driver in the economic recovery and reconstruction program that the president announced. So we can't leave them out. We'd like to hear from their perspective what the challenges are when it comes to them. With those words, again, we thank you for the time and the team that you have spent with us and the education that you have given to the community on a number of issues that you raised and we raised. Thank you very much. That takes us to the end of your agenda item. As a transparent committee, you may decide to remain in the meeting, but you know that we still have a lot of work to do, so you are excused if you still decide. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you, madam. Jerry, let's jump to our next agenda item.
Chairperson, yes. Announcements. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday with National Treasury. They will be the committee on the first quarter expenditure report for the 2022-23 financial year.
Thank you, Jerry. Let's meet National Treasury on Tuesday next week. Honourable members, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you for availing yourself on a Friday. Usually don't meet on a Friday with other responsibilities, but you took time and engaged with a very important institution, the AG. Much appreciated. This brings us to the end of today's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you.
Don't forget my call, Chairperson. Thank you.